Hi, my name is Dawn Matheson, and I'm the artist behind this work. I'll tell you a bit about the project first, then we'll head to the start of the walk. You've just been linked to a story told with sound as you walk along a mapped route at the Arboretum at the University of Guelph in Guelph, Canada. You can also listen online from anywhere to experience a visual, accessible version of this sound walk on the website. This is the first sound walk in hopefully many to come when this project moves into its second phase involving University of Guelph students. The title, How to Draw a Tree, is a play on words. It's not really about drawing trees, though you can if you want. This project looks at ways in which we can draw trees in nature to us for our mutual benefit. I believe that we've come apart, and that is making us both ill. So that's what we're doing on this walk, finding creative ways to get back together. Here, the forest has a voice and will be a narrator along with me. The soundtrack it creates will be unique for each one of you, because the forest's voice changes with the seasons and the time of day. While this story isn't a sad one, it's actually a love story. I do discuss mental illness, my own. So if anything I say brings up feelings that overwhelm, please visit our website for resources to access help. If you're a student, the University of Guelph Wellness Center is supporting this project. Check them out on campus. This walk is a little over 2 kilometers and should take you a bit over an hour. This is not a fitness walk. In fact, it's the opposite. I'm hoping you will take it slow. Inch along the forest floor like a millipede. Try to follow the pace of the footsteps in the soundtrack. It isn't easy to go slow for some of us. There are 15 stops on this walk. Sometimes you're stopped, sometimes you're walking. Just listen for the directions and the footsteps. Okay, cross over this parking lot to the southeast corner, directly across from you now. You will see this stump logo on a post under the maple trees. Once you've arrived, press play for the first section of the walk. You're here. Can you hear me? Can you say hey out loud or hey in your own language? Now the birds and trees know you were here and will get busy preparing their rolls for your personalized sound walk. Stay at this spot for a bit. We'll walk in a minute. It's so easy to forget to arrive in a place. You know, really arrive. Let's close our eyes together for a few minutes, if you feel safe to do so, and breathe in the forest. Are your eyes closed? I can't see you. Are you really here? Take a few more deep breaths. I like to think of our breath as wind, which we generate with our bodies, pulling in oxygen so kindly prepared for us by the trees, blowing out carbon dioxide that the trees in turn will take in. See how we are inside the trees and they are in us? Open your eyes. Let's walk straight ahead. And remember, go slow. In this fast world, moving slowly is like an act of rebellion. You're heading away from the parking lot, zigzagging towards the entrance to Wild Goose Woods. It's only about 2 minutes away. You can use the sound of the steps here to pace yourself. Walk so silently that the bottoms of your feet become ears. That's Pauline Oliveros, the master of deep listening. Look around. The pictures in this story are brought to you by nature, and they just so happen to be the best art our eyes will ever know, thousands of years in the making. If your mind drifts, and it will, Keep coming back to what you see and hear all around you. Yes, those people over there on your right at the sports field, they're here too, whether we like it or not. They share this breath, this wind, these trees with us. Same as the frogs who mate in the swamp on your left. Once you get to the big maple tree, which splits the path in two right before the boardwalk, please stop. There's something really important we have to do. We have to greet the forest properly before we can enter. I mean, you wouldn't just barge into someone's home without knocking first, would you? Press play for the next track once you are at the maple tree. This is the spot. You can lean against a tree if you'd like. They're strong. Most have been standing here a lot longer than you and I have been living. Trees' histories stretch over 300 million years into the past. I have always loved a forest. If you are here, I imagine you do too. This might sound dramatic, but trees save my life every day. I'll tell you more about that in a bit. Okay, here's what we have to do before we can head into the forest. If you have a water bottle, can you offer a little to our maple friend here, the gatekeeper to the Wild Goose Woods? You'll find out why down the road. Just pour a small amount at the base and save the rest in case you get thirsty too. Let's have a good look at this tree. Can you see all those funny knobs? It's so wrinkly. And then there's those hollows, homes to so many little critters. Some call it a Freeman's maple, a hybrid of a red and silver maple. Others a river or swamp maple. But for thousands of years, the maple tree was known as Ininatig, man tree in Anishinaabe. But for this walk, you don't need to know all these names. This isn't an interpretive walk. I don't have that kind of knowledge. I'm interested in emotional responses to trees, in our relationships with them. Plus, this tree probably doesn't know its name as Freeman. I think it's more interesting to get to know a plant before we learn its label. Sometimes, once we arrive at an answer, well, we stop asking questions. Plus, there are so many different ways of knowing. If you are comfortable, touch the tree. Hug it if you can get close enough. You might feel self-conscious, but who cares? The trees aren't judging you. Besides, hugging a tree feels really good to hold it tight and wrap your soft body around its solid mass. How do we know, really? How do we know that nature can't feel our love? No scientist has yet proven that it cannot. Let's start walking. Remember to tread lightly and notice small things. Follow the pace of the steps you hear. Slow, like how the trees grow. Let's play a game as we walk. Name things you see around you, just quickly, out loud. This is a great way to practice noticing. Plus, it's a good brain trick if you're ever feeling anxious. Using your senses to focus on what is here, now, calms you down and produces good feelings. Just noticing promotes another one of our senses, the sense of wonder. And actually, that's my favorite sense. That's what this project is about. Cultivating wonder for me and you and our planet, which are really just one thing anyhow. I met an old man here, ambling along with a walking stick, who had front teeth like a beaver's. He told me he was going from woodpecker to woodpecker. I said to him that I thought that sounded like a perfect way to be spending one's days. We're passing over a swamp. Depending what time of year you were here, it might not look like one, because it's an ephemeral swamp, a wetland that has been formed from a depression in the ground that temporarily holds water after rain, then dries out, fills with water, and then dries out. Like everything in life, a cycle. Okay, so a bit about me. I work as a social practice artist, which means I try to build relationships and find creative ways to come together. I often work with strangers who live with some kind of a difference, which has kept them apart from others. I believe that by imagining together, we can open minds and change perceptions. We tell our stories through video and audio projects. I've been told that this work helps people feel less alone. It sure has done that for me. And yet, a few years ago, I started getting sick of people. I mean, really, we humans, we can be hard to get along with. But trees, well, I've never had a problem hanging out with them. In fact, I feel some kind of magic when I'm among trees, always, without fail. They make me feel okay, and I don't really know how. Anyhow, I started to wonder, was there a way to work together? Could I come up with a project where humans, and the more than humans, could collaborate? Could I actually have an authentic, even intimate relationship with trees? How about you? Look at them. They are here with you now. Of course, we'll all have our own experiences with trees we've known. Stay still for a moment and take a look at these trees. This is poet Mary Oliver's. When I am among the trees, especially the willows and the honey locust, equally the beech, the oaks, and the pines, they give off such hints of gladness, I would almost say that they save me, and daily. I am so distant from the hope of myself, in which I have goodness and discernment, and never hurry through the world, but walk slowly and bow often. Around me, the trees stir in their leaves and call out, "Stay a while." The light flows from their branches, and they call again. "It's simple," they say. "And you too have come into this world to do this, to go easy, to be filled with light and to shine." To be filled with light and to shine. Well, that sounds wonderful. But guess what? When I came up here last year, all gung-ho, funding money in my pocket, a wonderful partnership with the Arboretum and the Wellness Center all set up, planning to spend 6 months walking these woods, meeting trees, wanting to be alone with them, hoping to find the one tree who could be my mate. I got out of my car, and boom, instead of astonishment, I immediately felt ashamed. I had a physical reaction that I didn't expect. I mean, I couldn't even look at the trees, let alone listen to them. I'd had no such problem the last 35 years I'd been walking in the forest. Then it dawned on me, in all my work, especially my work with marginalized populations, I'd always been diligent about consent. But here, in the forest, I didn't even ask the trees if they had any interest in working with me, a human, the greatest living threat to their existence. So now what?
And this one here?
Yeah.
It's another medicine tree.
Oh.
This is ironwood.
That's ironwood.
Or they call it hornbeam.
Okay.
But this is ironwood.
This is Peter Schuler, elder of the Mississaugas of the Credit, and a really swell guy with a great sense of humor, who keeps regular company with the trees. He certainly didn't need to create an art project to connect to nature. I knew I would never embark on a project like this without requesting the direction and wisdom of an Indigenous elder, seeking permission from the keepers of the land. So I phoned Peter and I told him what happened when I arrived and got out of my car that day. How I suddenly felt ashamed. He had a laugh, and he suggested he come down and talk to the trees himself, something so everyday for him. Little did I know he'd be exactly what I needed for this project. Every time I got stuck in my head, blabbering on and on, Peter kept bringing me back to the trees.
Kind of the plan is, the first half of my year, what I wanted to call the walk, where I'm walking and
here's
meeting.
Here's buckthorn right here.
I did a little side project at the park near
you me. See this here?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
These vines?
This is growing out of there. Something green.
Yeah.
It's funny.
There's a squirrel in front of you.
Peter told me that before he enters the forest, he always greets the trees with an offering of tobacco. And since I have no tradition of making tobacco offerings, I asked Peter if I could possibly offer water from my water bottle instead. Yep, he said.
Yep.
And so this is what I did, and what you have also just done. I was beginning to learn that what we bring to a relationship changes the relationship. So I would commit to showing up, no matter the weather, no matter my mood. I would keep an audio diary every time I visited. My version of a logbook. I'm at the Arboretum today, and I'm on my phone. And the crow has said hello. Wow, this is spring. Here I am again. You can hear the crunchy snow beneath my feet. I treated this as devotional work, a discipline of daily astonishment, like a religion, something I'd never had. Stop for a minute. Look up. See all those tall, slender trees with white bark up top and heart-shaped leaves that flutter in the wind? Or maybe you're here when the branches are bare. I'll play the sound for you here in case. Can you feel that sound in your body? It makes my skin tingle. Listen, these trees have an amazing story to share.
I can give you stories about trees in here. I mean, even this one right in front of you, this tall one, the trembling aspen.
Yeah.
This is Sean Fox. I thought Sean, who spent 20 plus years caring for the trees here at the Arb, could provide some insight. Understanding the forest's basic ecology and survival methods might give me insight into my own makeup and my own survival. Plus, he's not strictly science.
The one tree out here I visit when I'm just struggling in life.
This guy was talking my language.
Yeah, I just kind of come out here and give this big hug.
So I figured one walk would be okay. I'd ask him to tell me the aspen story. I mean, maybe they'd be my tree.
Most of the trunks that you're seeing that look similar are likely all the same individual. And they spread by colony, so they send up roots. So they're all connected by one root system. It's just like a giant network.
Down at our feet, we are walking on roots which form a vast, interconnected web of millions of species of fungi and bacteria. I've heard it called a world wood web, where trees swap nutrients, water, and some say stories with each other. It's a mutual relationship. Trees in isolation are at much greater risk of death, so easily blown over in the wind without roots clasping hands under the earth. Let's continue along the narrow trail a bit more. Just before the next raised boardwalk, stop. Look over your right shoulder at the tall, dead trees and sudden big sky. Careful of the giant hawk swooping down to grab you. Sorry, I do have a terribly active imagination. I'm a bit addicted to it. It gives me a rush. Okay, let's cross the boardwalk. I had to laugh at myself. I was so determined to select one tree, like a childish game of favorites. I did secretly want my tree to be a pine tree, but I was keeping an open mind. Let me explain why the one. I have a mind that flits all over the place, obsessing, then distracting. I'm prone to walk every path, switching mid-trail for another, just out of fear that the one I'm on might not be the right one. One of the worst things for a brain like mine is too many options. I can't make a decision. I thought Peter could give me some direction. So I asked him, how will I find my tree?
Well, I think that maybe the tree might find you instead of the other way around.
Maybe the tree will find me because you'll laugh, being my kind of a brain, is I started putting all this pressure on myself to find the right tree. And I started worrying, oh my goodness, what if I get a, you know, an invasive species tree? What's that going to say about me? And I started worrying because I'm going to sit with the tree and have an intimate experience with the tree, I didn't want to have to see people. And I thought, where is it going to be really private?
Peter finds a dead branch on the boardwalk.
When a tree chooses.
That's a good question. And you're the only one who has the answer.
Take the left path after the boardwalk. Peter doesn't realize that trusting my intuition doesn't come so naturally for me. I mean, for years, I did have many a medical doctor advise me that following my inner voice could prove unreliable and, frankly, dangerous. But there isn't time for me to explain this to Peter. He can't hear me. He's on the alert, moving to the trail on the left after the boardwalk, in through the trees.
Yep, this guy right here.
Is that?
Yep.
Wow. Let's follow. Keep walking until you see the opening that takes you out of the forest. Stop about 30 feet or so before.
Yeah, I saw him from way over there.
See, to your left, through the trees, tucked in there is a thick yellow birch tree with bark shagging off like a snake shedding its skin. Just look at it from here and stay on the trail.
That's a good spot. It's beautiful.
It even has a perfect little stump seat.
Yeah, I saw this one here. This one here called my name.
I've been walking over 3 months now, and Peter, well, maybe 30 minutes here in the forest, and just like that.
Touch it.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Peter found his tree.
Yeah, I've never seen that one before, and I walk here so much.
I can't deny I felt a little bit envious of Peter's easy rhythm with nature. I mean, he slides in there just like a family member, which is how he refers to the trees, as his relations. Kind of like this guy, the way he is with the birds, who I ran into right around this spot. He was out on a walk with a group of student interns.
So there's the eastern wood pewee, and there's the great-crested flycatcher, and the rose-breasted grosbeak, and a red-winged blackbird. And in the distance, there's a red-eyed vireo.
I swear, the forest had been quiet just moments before.
Oh, there's a swamp sparrow way in the
this
distance.
This guy shows up, and suddenly the woods are alive.
So it's a pretty busy place.
As we head out of the forest and into the light, I'll tell you about Chris Early, the Pied Piper to the birds, and longtime interpretive biologist at the Arboretum. Sean said I had to talk to him.
I'm a zoologist in a botanist world here at the Arboretum. I like the relationship stuff the best. Like, obviously, I love trees for trees being trees, but I really like, I always like how things interact with each other.
Getting to know a tree through its relations.
Oh, there's the Cooper's Hawk, so if you listen.
Chris really knows how to perk up his ears.
So we'll just have to be, let's just be quiet going through here.
Chris is so enthusiastic about sharing things he sees in nature, I can almost see a tail wagging. He believes that if people develop a sense of wonder for nature, well, then they would help save it.
If you listen to that, there's a kick, 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 kick sound, so that's the Cooper's Hawk.
Let's follow Chris's example and play a game again. This time, name things you hear.
Oh, listen. Can you hear the wood frogs?
That's Poppy, my dog. I let her lead the way sometimes on our walks. She has mastered full body noticing. That helps me let go. It's so busy here. Even the summer camp marches past.
Morning, everybody.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi,
thank you.
Stop for a minute. This is the main walkway intended for the public, out on a stroll. I wouldn't want to pick a tree out here. Too many people everywhere. Turn right on the promenade. Yes, I can hear that traffic too. And it's definitely not a sound I enjoy. I spend a good part of my hikes obsessed with finding spots furthest from traffic noise. And yet, here I was doing a sound project, engaging with the wind and trees and bird song, yet my mic kept picking up the hum of engines. I mean, what did I expect? The Arb is in the heart of the city, a patch of wild surrounded by pavement and concrete. We're bound to hear the busy world. Actually, how lucky are we to have it here? Okay, so remember how I said I didn't want to spend any more time with people, just trees? Well, that was a bit of a fib. The truth is, sometimes when I'm so sick of myself, I feel like it's my gift to the world to conceal myself, like a self-imposed banishment, as if I cursed the company I kept just by being there. Well, I'm trying to do things differently now. So I'm going to tell you a bit about my story. Well, it's one of my stories anyhow. The one I've been putting off telling you is it's not one I like to tell. But here goes. I have a youth diagnosis of bipolar. I'm not sure I agree with the labels. My life feels much more fluid and complex, but there's no denying that since childhood, I have felt things pretty strongly, and the range can be sudden and extreme. This overwhelm has continued throughout my life in many destructive but also life-giving ways. At times, I've hurt myself in order to contain it. But it can also open me up to wild beauty, compassion, and creativity. When I grew up, this type of label meant you were someone to be avoided. So I spent a lifetime trying to conceal this embarrassment, like an ugly tale I had to conceal. I didn't know how to manage it, and neither did most others, even professionals. All I knew was that it kept me apart. Early on, I learned that shame is an effective way to keep this messy self hidden, so I adopted it as my strategy, which worked on the outside for a while and made me look normal, but inside, it was a secret agony that festered and fed on itself, and it was exhausting. It was hard to keep on living some days. Now I'm too old for that. I'm too tired to keep that show going. Besides, if I can't be who I am now, when can I be? I came to realize that one of the best ways to dispel the stigma of mental illness, or whatever you call it, was to talk about it, defy that secret shame. So there it is. Now you know. That dark thing is out in the full of day to bake in the sun. And what a good place for it, really, out among the trees and the tree friends. This is where my story ended up coming out.
You know, you said something about vulnerability, and I think that this is, again, those layers that we build, right?
This is Mamona Hossein, a bona fide eco-psychologist and environmental activist whose profession it is to help nature help people and vice versa. It was easy to open up to her.
Like, I mean, that we think that vulnerability is weakness, and that we think that, you know, those points that we feel most exposed, and we assign negativity or shame, or yet if we were to look at it in our lives, those points are actually the deepest points of growth. And so is it really weakness? Mm-hmm. When you look at a tree, you can actually see those points of vulnerability, like together. It's all exposed. And even within ourselves, no matter how much we try to hide it, our vulnerabilities create who we are. Mental health in and of itself, had we lived in a world that didn't identify it as stigmatizing, that mm-hmm. didn't identify it as shaming, how much more would we have grown? How much more would we have leaned into each other, come together like these roots did, and mm-hmm. created that mm-hmm. strength, you know?
You made me think so much of, you know, there's a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in.
Yes.
Let's leave the promenade now and go under the arbor on your left. It too is a tree, by the way, just in a different form. Head towards the very untree-like pile of burgundy crates. I'll be honest, this sculpture didn't do much for me. I didn't know how to connect to it until I took a walk with another friend to the trees, Jeff Bird, the fellow who is mixing the soundtrack for this sound walk. I had no idea there was sound inside that fiberglass pile. It took Jeff, his ear perpetually to the ground and his bent towards delight, to bring out its song. I guess that was happening to me too. Others on this journey were helping me bring out my song.
Not bad, lots of potential there.
So this is essentially changing the relationship to this thing we both did not find visually appealing.
No.
A few weeks later, early morning, he returned. But this time, Jeff brought a drummer friend, Adam, to full-on play the sculpture. I watched them from behind the weeping beach so as not to disturb, where I found myself, well, weeping. Here were these people, busy lives of their own, struggles and joys, and yet they were coming together to nurture me and my story. It touched me deeply. Place your hands on this burgundy beauty and feel its song vibrate through your whole body. Let's move along now. See how long you can keep that sound in your body. We're heading towards the Japanese garden. That's where you can let the sound go. You'll really hear the quiet now. Getting out of our head and into our bodies is a true elixir for mental distress, and sound is an easy entry point. All sound is vibration felt with our whole bodies, not just our ears. Really, all life is vibration, and rhythm is fundamental to all life. Elder Peter spoke of the drum, the universal heartbeat of Mother Earth. It's believed to heal and restore the natural rhythm of the world. Can you feel it? I could see it now. Unintentionally, I was assembling a makeshift tree support team. And it wasn't just one way. They started telling me about their lives, too. Why am I surprised? Trees have always brought people together. Under branches, people gather. I was suddenly overwhelmed with the realization that I loved all these people, walking around, shining like the sun. Pause here in front of the Zen garden. I used to bring my children here when they were young and wild. It amazed me. As soon as they entered the shelter with its reflecting pool and soft, dappled light from the foliage, the commotion of the world slipped away and we all lapsed into calm contemplation. When they were babies, we would sit in the little tea house and I'd nurse them to sleep as the cherry blossoms fell. In my 20s, with a diagnosis I had, a doctor told me it would be wise not to have children. Touch the time ground cover with your hands. First, the softness, then the solid earth beneath. You have a place here. Take a look at this plaque below you. Please read it aloud. Before enlightenment, chopping wood, carrying water. After enlightenment, chopping wood, carrying water. Just don't chop down any wood around here, please. This saying actually blows my mind. I know it's simple, but for me, it feels like everything. Mental illness is not something that is cured or overcome, nor does it necessitate the end of life, though it certainly can. It is not separate from who I am, and it will always be here. It does require care. But self-care can be tough for several reasons. It puts all of the responsibility on the individual instead of really what is a messed up social system of inequity. And for many of us who have learned the art of self-loathing, it's hard to care for yourself when you don't care about yourself. Still, it must be treated like a non-negotiable daily practice. Sleep, listen to the birds, read poetry, make art, laugh and laugh, if I can. Walk alone, walk with those who love me, take meds if I need to, and always visit the trees, before, during, and after. Carry on to your left. Can you hear the fountain as you pass? Or is that pool empty now, like the ephemeral swamp at the start of our walk? Fills with water, then empties. Once you are across from the Italian garden, turn to your right towards the Arboretum lawn. Veer to your left past that pine. Do not enter that open green space. That's not for us at this time. That is the West Lawn, the place where humans of all comings and goings celebrate beginnings in white and mourn endings in black. Instead, take the secret pathway to the left of the opening to the lawn. It runs the circumference. Do you hear the people there? Shh. Try not to be seen. If I weren't an artist, I'd be a spy. I'm that person who does not close her eyes during group meditation. I'm studying faces, trying to read thoughts. I'm outside the window at a party, looking into the kitchen at people snacking and chatting, marveling at how they just plain be. How do others do life? This isn't me all the time, of course, and it would surprise many to learn about it. I've mastered the social game in many ways. But I do disappear when I feel unacceptable. Then I reappear again once I feel presentable. Sometimes, wishing I never reappeared at all. I cannot live with you. It would be life. And life is over there, behind the shelf. So we must meet apart, you there, I here, with just the door ajar that oceans are, and prayer, and that white sustenance, despair. That's Emily Dickinson, one of my favorites. By now, we have mostly made a half circle and are getting close to the gazebo on the right. The gazebo's a tree too, by the way. Don't go there. Do you hear that on your left? You may not believe me, but I swear that bird is here every time I pass this very spot on the spying circle. That sad whine from the bushes is announcing our presence. There's that bird again. The Chippewa call it the bird that cries with grief. For this call mimics its nemesis, the cat. How plucky. This dull gray bird is my favorite bird, the gray catbird. Let's follow it to the opening on the left, directly across from the gazebo. You will see a bunch of bushes in a little area I call the thicket, whether or not that's actually what it's called. I don't know. This place is a bit of a nowhere land on the Arboretum map. Just head straight-ish. You might get a bit disoriented in here. That's what happened to me one summer day. Rest if you need, or lie down, or dance, or fly like I did.
There's so many birds here and it's a wild field. I don't really know this spot. And immediately, I get this feeling in nature. It's like a rush where I feel fantastic. Listen to the cicadas.
Wind through these bushes in the direction of the tall maples, slightly to your left. The catbird. It's a mimicry of all the bird songs he has heard before, and now, it felt like an echo of my very own song. Frankly, I think it's an ingenious strategy for concealing himself, something I can admire. I'm shocked to find out later that the catbird has an additional talent, being able to sing with two voices at once. Whistles, squeaks, gurgles, whines, like avian jazz. The parallels between us were starting to feel almost mystical. Right here, I lost and found myself in what I sometimes call a perfect moment. others sometimes call mania. Everything comes together, body, mind, and spirit. My mind comes up with ideas, projects, hilarious scenarios, but even more, my body has the energy to carry them out. I see connections I've never seen before, and I feel a panic to share them. I've heard these experiences described as the dangerous gifts of bipolar. Great heights can mean perilous falls.
That's the gray catbird. This is a great spot here.
Hop trees, prickly ash, a number of different dogwoods, forsythias, fringe trees, burning bushes, spindle trees.
It's so beautiful!
Kentucky coffee trees.
Can't take it.
Buckeyes.
At the tall silver maples, there will be three trailheads. Take the middle one, a shadowed hollow of cedar and pine. We can take shelter there from this big sky. That is the Wall Custance Trail. Follow it around to its left. My lovely, itchy Icarus with hot teardrop beads of wax falling upwards from your plunging body. The sun is on your side. It fights for your success, not found, at least for now, in flight, but in the quality of your descent. Take notes on your way down. Observe closely everything that breaks. Count the added tangles the wind sows to suppress your rebel hair. And when you land in the wood of your sickly physician tree, speak generously of your symptoms. Isn't that what this whole up-down game thing's about? To be honest to the deepest roots who love you? This is Gregory Kennedy, a former Jesuit and a poet to the trees. The two of us walked these paths one day, and he gifted me with this poem. By now, on your walk, careful of your footing. You're navigating unstable ground. It's bumpy, yet beneficial. Both things. It's those roots underground, clasping hands. Have you ever heard of Haldra, the wife of the forest? I hadn't heard about her before either. But I was told that it's important to know the stories of where we come from in order to know ourselves. My Norwegian heritage is seeped in tree myth. At the heart of all life is Yggdrasil, the immense and sacred world tree. It's a European ash tree. I hear there's one up here at the Arboretum, but I'm yet to find it. The myth of the Haldr, though, is the one I connect with the most. Her name means hidden or secret in Norwegian folklore. And surprisingly, Pine Tree Mary in Swedish folklore, which I take as another sign pointing me, hopefully, towards my favorite pine. Haldra hides in the forest, for however enchanting she may be, she has an inhuman feature, an animal's tail, usually a cow's, and her back resembles a hollowed-out tree. She's sometimes painted as a seductress, as so many female mythical figures are, manipulative and dangerous to men. But I don't buy that. What I do know is that people don't want to see that tale. After a high, I'm painfully aware of my own. You are now going to notice an opening in the forest to your right. There are a few large oak trees here. You are in the right spot if you see a frisbee golf cage. There's something out in the distance. It's a tree that so many people on my little tree team were certain was destined to be mine. They call him the octopus tree. Stop here. Look a little to your left, past the service road and toward the city street. To the right of the sign, there is an unusual looking pile of branches. You may not see it if the trees in the foreground are in foliage. We don't have time to walk over there on this walk, so I'll tell you what I saw.
Okay, so from standing here, it looks like a tree that reminds me of a broken umbrella. You know, all the metal sprongs, whatever, have all just folded down and they're broken. It looks like, or it looks like the top has been lopped off. To me, it looks more aquatic. Yeah, it looks like a creature that's low to the ground and crawling along the Earth's surface.
Sean tells me it was one of the only trees in the area that survived the ice storm in 2013. It's interesting, in a curated arboretum, I imagine most would have taken down that damaged tree, but not Sean.
You see the resilience in that tree, you see the threads that are still holding it together, and you give it a chance. And instead of removing that tree because you think it's not what a tree should be anymore, you give it that opportunity to become what it now is. The branches now go out in every direction for 30, 40 feet in every direction, like the tentacles of an octopus, all being held together by that common thread, that trunk that still endures. The hope is that that tree continues to endure like that and inspire and become wildlife habitat and a curiosity and a unique tree that doesn't have to be conforming to exactly what we think a tree has to be, but being what it now is.
It's true, octopus would be a clear choice, the obvious symbol of resilience. Wounds, open, right to the world, and such an abundant regrowth. But he felt too obvious. And well, that traffic noise. But octopus did inspire a few big shifts in me. One, if I'm to create a project that works to reframe and destigmatize mental illness and its treatment, even a little bit, maybe I shouldn't be hiding myself and my tail away in the dark forest. The other big shift? Did you notice that I stopped referring to trees as it or them, but now as persons? It just happened, and I don't know how. I'm not going to overanalyze it. I'm just going to trust it. But one thing I do know, I still hadn't found my tree, or one hadn't chosen me yet. Turn around and return to Wal Custance Trail. Follow along in the same direction. It gets a bit narrower. You'll have to walk single file. There's a sweet little boardwalk to cross and some slim birches. I thought I'd walk with Chris again to see what suggestions he'd have for me on my tree hunt. Plus, he lightened me up.
Do I want something that has been injured, or do I want dead trees?
Gosh, you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself. I figure you should just sort of go, hey, I like this one, and then just stick with it, right?
Like, yeah. But I like the question.
Yeah, you just don't want to overanalyze it either, right? You want to just go, I connect with this tree, and I think this is going to be it, and then go for it, right? Did you hear all the trees crying back there when they said, oh, she just walked past me? She didn't stop. I hear her trying to pick a tree, and I'm trying to look as great as I can, and she just walked right past me. It's okay. You don't listen to her, okay? It's okay.
I'd heard about this fellow around town, an animal tracker, a wooer of nature, Byron. He, too, had a youth mental illness diagnosis and also found a great reprieve in the natural world. This guy was all about wonder. He had to be. He spent his days as an outdoor educator for young children.
If you were to pick a tree here, what would your process be?
I'd do exactly what you're doing. It's like, right now we're walking through a party, right? Mm-hmm. Here's all these members, all these individuals at the party. Mm-hmm. And we're surrounded by them. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's cottonwood, there's pine back there, the bald cypress, yeah. Another pine. When you walk into a party, you don't just sit down next to anybody. Mm-hmm. You sort of let the feel mm-hmm. come, mm-hmm. and then you hang out. You're like, okay, hey, mm-hmm. can I sit here? At times we'll hear no's, and it'll be like, mm-hmm. that's what a no sounds like. Mm-hmm. At times we'll hear yes's, and be like, okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe you go with who you know, mm-hmm. because they're going to mm-hmm. introduce you to people who maybe you don't know yet. Just showing up mm-hmm. builds relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like mm-hmm. a lot of people I know really want these deep instinctual connections with things right away. Any relationship takes time, love, mm-hmm. patience, some disappointment, mm-hmm. some compromise. Mm-hmm. But then in time, like, we get to know someone, we get to see, what are they like in a windstorm? You know, I know what I'm like in a windstorm, but you don't just want a sunny day tree, right? Like, then you only know the sunny day tree. You don't know, how does it deal when kids are trying to climb it? How does it deal when the birds are migrating? How does it deal when it loses all of its leaves?
I had been meeting trees. There was a lonely linden on a hill, a scraggy Scotch pine in a field by the water tower. But as perfect as they were, they didn't feel right. Not for either of us. If you've made it to the wide gravel path, turn left, leading into the world of trees. When you reach a big, tall, gangly pine tree on your right, stop.
Sunday, 11:28 a.m.
I found my tree! I found my tree! I found my tree! I found my tree!
I had to call home. Of course, a pine. I knew it. This ponderosa was not at all like the majestic giants I remembered from my early childhood home in British Columbia. This guy was so friendly and goofy. His gangly, lanky arms, the long finger needles in bunches of three clasping little acorns. He made me smile and laugh so much, and I loved him right away. To me, he looked like he was drawn by Dr. Seuss, a perfectly ridiculous prehistoric creature. And what a tree for practicing your sense of touch. Ponderosa's trunk is perfect for hugs. You can get close enough to smell the sticky sap between the rusty orange plates of bark. I heard that not only do trees connect through their roots, they communicate through the air using scent. He must have smelled us coming and looked his best. Let's listen with our nose. See how he moves in the wind, how he dances? If you gently take a branch, you can softly shake his hand and see the wobble right up to the brawny trunk. Such a loving and lovely tree. But I'm sorry to report that after about a week of bliss sitting under my love's canopy, I heard a no. But it wasn't him, and it wasn't me. We just couldn't get in any alone time together. I mean, I was okay to share him, but being just a couple feet from the popular walking path meant a parade of people. And I have this problem of acknowledging everyone who passes. And I just felt too seen. Too much into the fire for me, and possibly for the passers-by. I had to get out of there. I love you, Ponderosa. Face the trail and the world of trees. Careful as you cross. Don't rush. Things feel like they're happening fast here. Cut across the lawn. Head a bit to your right between those fir trees towards an old bench. Once you've passed between the balsam firs and before the bench, you might see the remnants of a mugo pine stump on your left. Pause for a moment. It's important to acknowledge things that are no longer here. Can you feel what once was? Beyond the bench, and just to the right, before the ivy trail, there will be a few tall maple trees. Those look so much like the maples from my parents' backyard here in Guelph, the one whose branches we swung on, and whose roots below we buried our family cats. How many nights had we sat under their canopy for late summer suppers? Go there. The second maple inn, the big one in the middle. Go around front, as if a tree has a back and front. Yes, I had certainly been projecting many human traits on trees by now, I guess in desperation for familiarity. So before I profess to you and the world that this is my tree, I'll let you know that it isn't. I was making this tree my tree, but I wasn't prepared to let myself know that at the time. I was desperately searching for all the signs. And then one came. look at the inscription. It seemed impossible. The space between the notes. This is what this whole project has been about. It's everything I'm learning. It's not me. It's not the trees. It's the relationship between us. That's it. But even though that truth resonated in my body, the choice was made by my mind, and it was a message composed by a human, carved on a plaque. This wasn't the tree talking. And this got me really down. Sometimes it's hard to know what will set it off. I didn't come up to the Arboretum for a good while. Stay here. I'll tell you about it. You can sit down if you'd like. I'm not at the tree and I'm not in the forest. I'm tucked in the furthest corner of my room. As small as I can be. To just lay down on the soft ground and have it overtake me. Like being in a little den. I guess this is depression. There's no soaring, no flying, no hope. This lonely place where you feel absolutely no connection to anything. It's just a place where everything is cut off. And you can't get small enough. And it can't get dark enough. And you can't get away far enough. And when you're in it, you don't think it will ever, ever go away. And you're just looking for some kind of tangible pain, because that makes so much more sense. Is there a cancer that I can hold on to? Is there any blood? I don't know. I know that might be hard to listen to, but you know, I was learning. I'm not just Sunny Day Dawn on this project. Remember bringing our whole selves? I had promised I would chop wood and carry water. I had trusted in the trees and in my team now. I didn't have a choice but to return. And so I did. But I came on a day when it was raining so hard it would ensure few people would be out. I hid under a rain hat and an umbrella. My shoulders slumped. My body humped, which always accompanies depression. I crept along like a cockroach, unseen. Follow me to the ivy trail, just beyond these maple trees, where you can turn left. Since I had no wherewithal to lead myself, I brought Poppy, and we followed along this very path. Everything that happens from here forward happened in one day. In not too long, you will pass between two Manchurian cherry trees on your left and right. Look at how they are both thriving. And if you wanted to drown, you could, but you don't, because finally, after all this struggle and all these years, you simply don't want to anymore. You've simply had enough of drowning, and you want to live, and you want to love. That's David White. Keep walking forward until you get to the beautiful grove you see ahead. These are the Katsuras, and it's nearly impossible for me to not find some comfort here. If you're here in spring or summer, you will see this canopy, leaves not just sprouting on branch tips, but flushing out all the way down the branches. It's an all-embracing blanket, an oxygen tent, reviving breathless humans. I began to feel my body lighten some, and I gave thanks to the trees, and I gave thanks to the rain. I was filling up, having emptied out. Keep walking slowly forward. Halfway to the arbor. On your right, I noticed that the ARB staff had recently erected some new signage identifying the trees along the path. And there it is, the European ash. Right here, the Yggdrasil, the world tree from my Norwegian heritage. I nod, but I do not stop. Poppy is pulling me forward towards the arbor. Please wait for me there. And then it happened. It really did. It happened. A gentle tug on my shoulder. I had thought Poppy and I were heading back to the parking lot. No tree, but proud to have made it out in my condition. Instead, something was calling, but not with words. Please turn around. This is where I saw her. It's not like I knew it was my tree right away. Not at all. I just felt an incredible familiarity. And for the first time on my walk, I felt like, well, she might need me. I thought she was sick. Return back on the path. See the two trees on the lawn, just to the right, before the Katsura Grove. The first is a smaller version of her. She stands behind. This is how I saw her on that rainy day. Branches drooped, many dead, trunk hunched over, leaves warted and swollen. Of course, what I didn't see at the time is that I was projecting. The tree, in this rain-soaked state, looked like how I felt that day, world-worn, withered. I thought she needed me, and well, maybe she did, but clearly now, I see it was me who needed her. I could feel it deep in my body. I had found my tree. She had found me. I offered her water from my bottle, not feeling one bit silly, even though it was raining. I sat down, leaned my back against her strong trunk, and closed my eyes. Please sit or stand in silence for a moment. Let's listen to the tree. Do you hear that? Whoever that is, she is in Hackberry right now. But what else is here is all these little tiny, tiny flies. Some bigger flies. Some ladybugs. Some ants. Obviously my little bird friend. The closer I got to her, I could see that she was full of life. This was one generous tree. I could feel her love radiating. There was an overwhelming nurturing and mothering vitality from her. I was so surprised to see that she had berries, and they looked almost exactly the same as those warts on her leaves. The disease and the fruit looked just the same. Both these things were here, like it or not. Well, just like the traffic and the bird song, like despair and delight. Both have a place. In fact, Sean told me that these warts were not warts, but nipple galls. Nipples! I could hardly believe it. I had felt mothering energy. These are in fact homes to tiny insects that have relied on this tree species since these types of trees have been around. Of course, you may not be surprised to hear that my tree is not sick. She's not sick at all. She is a super hardy, healthy tree. Do you see all the stumps? Other than the mini her next door, she's the last one standing. Elms had succumbed to Dutch elm disease, and ash from the ash borer. A hackberry, It's a tree I'd never heard of. I could hardly believe it. The two words representing opposites, hack, cutting off, or a coughing up. And the berry, well, nurturing, life-sustaining, sweet. Once again, these polarities coexisting. The bittersweet that is living. Remember octopus? You know, the tree that was split open in the ice storm, who was such a symbol of resilience? Everybody said that tree had to be my tree. Well, he too was a hackberry. I have so much to tell you about her. I returned to visit throughout the year, recording hours and hours of audio of me talking to her. I was even here for the tiny two-hour period that happens only once a year when the nipple galls emerge. I was really getting to know hackberry's relations.
Can you hear that? That little tiny pitter-patter are thousands and thousands and thousands of bugs landing on me.
There's a haze of white, but then when you stand under the tree, directly near the trunk, they're everywhere, everywhere. All over my arms. If I stay still, I'm covered in them.
Certainly a lot of noises. Child. A bird, a horn, traffic, wind, leaves rustling. So I've been hugging hackberry, and I've been squeezing as tight as I can with my fingers hooked into some of the bark. And she's so strong. When I was little, I had so much love that I squeezed the cat so hard my mom had to pry my hands apart to release them. I couldn't let go.
Eventually, the whole tree team came to meet hackberry. All of us connected forever now through her.
She was here all this time. She was here all this time, and nature and the earth has this way of kind of really humbly just being there until you are ready to, really engage with it and then give of yourself, be willing to be vulnerable. And she waited patiently.
I invited Elder Peter to sit under my tree as well and share in some of my garden produce, a new hobby I'd taken up since this project began, trying to get closer to the earth. I was telling him how hackberry had called me, almost mystically.
Then how is it possible to know some things that you shouldn't know? Like when you were walking away from this tree, what dragged you back?
Yeah, I have no idea.
When you come into this realm of spirituality.
Oh, Sean, this is, no, please come. This is Sean Fox. He's the one I told you about. And I would just actually, yes, this is Peter Schuler. And Sean knows this whole story. And I'm actually asking Peter right now about why this tree called to me. I feel like I'm going to cry just having you two meet. But anyways, I just had no idea why this tree pulled me over here. And that's what I was trying to have happen to me. Because I was saying to Peter, I was forcing it. And my brain, my thinking self. And that something else just had me turn around. And I don't know what it is. I can't.
You can't force it. Work.
Yeah.
It's just like when you force it, you're putting a glass between you and what's there.
Mm-hmm. The things you notice when you slow down for a moment, you know, to see it.
Yeah.
I was finally able to hear and trust my inner voice in the quiet, in the slow. Elder Peter taught me one more thing. He said to always say miigwech to the trees, which I had always interpreted as thank you. But Peter told me that the more accurate interpretation of this Ojibwe word is, this is enough. This is enough. It is all here, now. Clearing by Martha Postlewaite. Do not try to save the whole world or do anything grandiose. Instead, create a clearing in the dense forest of your life and wait there patiently until the song that is your life falls into your own cupped hands and you recognize and greet it. Only then will you know how to give yourself to this world. It's funny. When you sit under a tree, you're actually looking outward, not at the tree itself. I was always looking out at at the Katsuras, that grove. And I was listening to the Katsuras, her canopy. It created the most noise when the wind blew through the leaves. Byron says that maybe this is how trees say their names to us, the rustle with the wind. One day, the Katsuras were shouting their names. I had to go over to listen. Please walk across the lawn, parallel to the trail, away from the arbor. Go in between the bushes you see ahead and the Katsuras. As soon as you pass those bushes, the tree closest on your left, with all the dedications, is the one I want you to visit. You will know you're at the right tree when you see that she is split down the middle. Her center is a hollow. I couldn't help but see Huldra, the wife of the forest, from my Norse mythology. Remember, her back is a hollowed-out tree. Stop here. I'd always been looking at the leaves and the canopy. I'd never read the tree dedications below. Now I see that these trees are all dedicated to the lives of students. This is the Student Memorial Forest. And this very tree is the memorial tree for students who lost their lives during the very period when I was walking these trails, working on this project about trees, mental illness, and wellness. See the engraving? Please read it aloud. Love is like the wind. You cannot see it, but you can feel it. My sound walk, How to Draw a Tree, ends here, but the project continues to grow. A hackberry sapling will be planted on campus in honor of my tree, the first in a new wellness circle of trees at the University of Guelph. And we now move into a new phase, engaging three students living with mental illness of their own, following their own path, listening and learning from the trees and the tree team in phase two called How to Draw a Forest. Every tree longs for a forest.